If we see that the renovation history, say for the last past 10 years, correlates with the amount in reserve funds, meaning if there haven't been big renovations, they have enough to pay for them, or vice versa, if the reserve funds is depleted, they've done all the big work in the last 10 years, so we know that the building is well managed. In that case, building fees obviously will escalate over time, but in a more predictable manner, and not in any jumps and starts like that. And also, being charged one-time fees for stuff is very unusual. That means a very badly managed condo. With houses, again, unless it's 10 years and younger, once they hit about 20 years, that's where the unexpected stuff starts happening, because they're flimsy wooden structures that are usually not really built to last in Japan. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, this is a call with a new potential client based in the USA but of Japanese descendants. And he's looking to purchase a bit of a hybrid, essentially an investment property to start with, somewhere in Osaka, not too far from the airport, but one that he could potentially move into himself if and when he moves to Japan in 10 years or so. And so we talk about his strategy and try to figure out together what would be his best bet. So houses versus condos, and how that landscape is different here in Japan than it is in other countries, and specifically in the US, the due diligence required for these purchases, buying tenanted as opposed to vacant properties, and also about the purchase process itself, our services and fees, how viewings and specifically remote viewings work, where to find suitable listings and how, and also how to remit funds into and out of Japan, as well as what would be a good time to resell a secondhand property. So enjoy the conversation and don't clock out at the end of it, because we've got another little surprise for you. So make sure you stick around right after this.
And sorry also for canceling our appointment. I was flossing and some old feeling suddenly flew out of my mouth, so I had to get to the dentist a bit urgently.
No problem.
Okay, so you're looking to purchasing property in Japan. You have no presence in Japan, but you've got Japanese ancestry, I'm assuming, based on your last name, right?
Yes, I'm actually a fourth generation
okay.
in US. But my father had some relatives, but we didn't keep good record keeping. He's already passed, and we don't keep in touch with anybody, so I wouldn't know how to reach anyone, any relatives that
okay, but
I
you're looking
possibly
for
may
a
have.
holiday home. You're not looking to relocate to Japan or anything of that sort.
I actually would like to eventually, but I'm currently still working, and maybe 5 to 10 years more. And additionally, I have an elderly mother. She's in her 90s, so I can't
Oh, mom,
really
that's
be
amazing.
away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she
Lucky that.
Still okay? Still with us?
Yes, she's still doing good. She just can't travel.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of be around. So I can't stay away
I know the feeling.
too long.
My mom's only 75 or 6, but the frequency of the overseas trips are decreasing pretty rapidly at this age.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so Holiday Home South Osaka, you mentioned. This is the area near the airport or near Shin-Osaka Station.
I was actually looking between up to the lower part where the Kansai Airport is. So Izumisano, Kishiwada, I think, and Sakai, somewhere not too close to Osaka, of course, for the pricing, but above the airport, so that it's, I mean, I could conceivably say in the future I could live further out, but I'm also thinking about as investment property, I would, if I'm not going to live there right away, I would have a long-term rental. So it'd be easier to maybe rent
So
closer
you're not
towards.
going to be using it even for holiday purposes in the near future?
I would like to, but it wouldn't be for. I was thinking maybe in the future, if I don't get residency in Japan, I could take a month, 2 months as a holiday vacation. But currently, for the next 5 to 10 years, I don't perceive myself being in Japan for long term. So it would be more 10 to 12 day type vacations. So
Once a year, you think, ish?
yes, I have been going to Japan maybe every other year from 2008
Right.
and up to COVID period, and then I just actually went back for the first time after the COVID and in 2023. And then I'm going again in next week. I'll be there.
Right. So if you're I guess there's two aspects there. One is, yes, if you're only going to be here up to, let's say, 2 weeks a year, then it doesn't make sense probably to get into the hassle of short-term or monthly rentals just so you can use the property because,
Right.
I mean, you might as well just stay in an Airbnb or a hotel for that short period of time and not
Sure.
disrupt the income flow. So that part I understand, but in that case, I don't. If it's going to be a straight out long-term residential investment property, I don't know that I'd be going for a house unless. What's your budget? Is it going to be a brand new house?
No. Initially, I was looking at $60,000 to $80,000.
Yeah.
Then I started looking at the websites and looking at some of the conditions. And unless you're in the Naka area, then you're not going to
Pretty old and dilapidated at that price level in
correct.
Osaka,
So,
yeah.
the condition and the need for renovations sort of swayed me towards trying to get something newer that requires less maintenance. So that's the reason why. Regarding the house, my family has a condo, and it's just the maintenance fee just keeps going up and up, and sometimes there's additional fees that it's unexpected. So getting a house, it seems a little bit more sure on what the future maintenance cost might be.
It's actually usually the other way around, unless you're buying a house that's going to be 10 years or younger. It sounds like your family might have a badly managed condo. Maybe they didn't do the due diligence on the management company and the owner union
That's
in advance.
probably the case too.
I mean, usually our
Okay.
customers who buy condo units, if again due diligence is done properly and we recognize that they've got a renovation history that and the reserve funds that seem to correlate, meaning they have enough. Sorry, we're acclimating a new cat here, and the old crew is giving him a hard time, so I might have to break up a fight. So if we see that the renovation history, say for the last past 10 years, correlates with the amount in reserve funds, meaning if there haven't been big renovations, they have enough to pay for them. Or vice versa, if the reserve funds is depleted, they've done all the big work in the last 10 years, so we know that the building is well managed. In that case, building fees obviously will escalate over time, but in a more predictable manner and not in any jumps and starts like that. And also, being charged one-time fees for stuff is very unusual. That means a very badly managed condo. With houses, again, unless it's 10 years and younger, once they hit about 20 years, that's where the unexpected stuff starts happening because
Okay.
flimsy wooden structures that are usually not really built to last in Japan.
Right.
What is your so what is your updated budget? What sort of house were you considering or looking at?
I'm looking at 150,000 US,
So
22
122
million
million.
Japanese, around there.
Have you seen
I
listings
was
that are 10 years and younger at this price?
around 10-ish,
Okay.
early 2000 to 2025, 2005 maybe. Well, one of the reasons I was looking at a house is also that if in 5, 10 years I want to move to Japan or have a holiday home where I can stay 2 to 3 months at a time,
Yeah.
then a house might be desirable. But
Well, by then it's going to be 20, 25 years old, though, so you might want to start considering reselling it anyway. So, I mean, you're the boss. We'll help you buy whatever you want to buy. But
sure.
if we're going to be buying 10 years and younger, that's fine. That's not going to have any major maintenance expenses, at least in the, foreseeable 10 years or so, barring, some earthquake damages, which can always happen. But aside from that, yes, that's going to be fairly safe and stable on the expense front. But then, round about the time where you're considering to potentially move into it, you probably want to start considering reselling. Like, I wouldn't buy anything that's older than 20 years. And when it hits about 20, 25, I'd consider reselling it if it's a house.
Okay,
So
reselling
just factor
versus.
that into your calculation. The other thing is that with houses, you're catering to family tenants as opposed to singles or couples with a single child kind of thing.
Yes.
And Japan's population trends being what they are, those kinds of tenants are a bit harder to source. It's a lot easier to find a single or a couple without children, or with a single, toddler level kind of child. And also with a house, you've got a bigger floor plan. So in between tenants, there's more to renovate and repair compared to a smaller footprint condo.
Okay.
So those are all factors to consider. Again, if it's 10 years and younger, it's not a big deal, but just maybe have a little bit more of a think about it, because I don't know within 5 years, but definitely if you're going to be moving here within 10 years, there's a fair likelihood it's not going to be that house. You might want to get rid of it by then.
Okay. What I was thinking is that would be the house I would possibly move to, but you're thinking that I would probably change my mind,
Not
likely.
that you change your mind, but as it approaches 20, 25 years of age, you will need to start pouring money into it. Not huge amounts, maybe, I don't know, on average, $1 or $2,000 a year, and then it gets closer to 30, maybe $2,000, $3,000 a year. On average, I mean, it'll ebb and flow. You'll have 5, 6 years where everything's okay, and then the roof goes for 20,000 or whatever the case may be, depending on weather
Right.
conditions and earthquakes and whatnot. So with the house, the entire structural maintenance is on you. You always have to put money aside for those kinds of things. And when they get to between 20 and 30 is when that starts escalating.
Okay. Yep. That's one of the reasons why I started going up in my budget to get something much newer.
Yep. But
But
I mean, I
I haven't
definitely
really been
say,
considering condos or apartments.
I mean, just from the investment perspective, when you want to live there, then definitely you want to live in whatever you want to live in, whether it's a house, if you want the garden, the backyard, then yes, definitely a house. But from a strictly residential long-term investment perspective, condo, well-managed condos, as opposed to the one that your family has, are usually more safe and stable. That's all.
Okay. Up to this point, I haven't
Also
been.
you'll get something closer to center, which has a better chance of holding or potentially even gaining in value.
Right. Yep. Well, up to this point, I haven't really been considering apartment. I
You're
have
the boss.
only been
We're happy
looking.
to buy. We're happy to help you buy a house if you
Well.
want. But our investor clients usually don't target single family homes unless it's a brand new one and they're planning to do an Airbnb there or something of that sort.
Right. Okay. So, that's good. I'm talking to you now that I'm getting a little bit more insight on what investor types might do versus like you said, a holiday home purchaser.
I mean,
So
you're a bit of a hybrid in the sense that you do eventually plan to move here, but what other people, I mean, we have one two customers out of about 300 that have purchased single family homes for similar reasons, because they're thinking to move into them, maybe DIY them. I mean, they're not looking for something new. They bought older ones, but they are looking to potentially use it for private purposes down the track. But most of them have bought condos, or if their budget stretches that far, maybe a small apartment building, two, three floors for 300, 400,000 US, which gives them multiple income streams, etc. But that's probably over your budget at the moment. But from a
I'm actually
purely
did see a property on your website about a three-story apartment with 9 units. And it was close to towards Osaka, and but it was mid 300,000. So
That's
it's,
usually where they start.
I mean, I can swing it, but I'd be pouring all my savings into it, and
No,
it'd be
let's not do that. Let's not do
right. That's the
that.
reason why it's like I can't really do it. So.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in web solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
So,
I mean, again, you're a bit of a hybrid, but the time at which you'll be using the property for personal use is far ahead enough for me to think that maybe it'd be better to buy a more safe and stable condo unit where we can kind of project what the expenses will be, even if they do rise slightly over time. They always will. But and then as you're getting closer to actually moving here, then consider reselling it and recycling that money into the house. Because at that
okay.
point, the same money will buy you something younger, right?
Right. And initially, I was looking at lower cost properties and also thinking possibly if I could swing 2 units where one would be strictly for long-term rentals and one would be maybe a project where I could use it and not necessarily have it populated. When I go there, I could do some DIY renovations.
Are you into that?
But
Is that something that you do on the regular?
I don't do it regularly, but I feel that I'm pretty handy with my hands, so I can do some minor renovations on my own. And if I have a place where I can take my time, like let's say I do stay there 2 to 3 months, I could find a place that I could possibly do some
But
minor renovations on my own.
you're talking about 10, 12 days a year at this point, no?
Well, right now, yes. Yes,
Well,
but
I mean, again, we can do
if
it, but
it's
I wouldn't buy it and just leave it there until you have the time to deal with that. Let's cross that
okay.
bridge when you have the time to DIY it.
Okay, yeah. Now that the price of my first purchase is starting to go up, I don't think I would want to get two at one time. So Okay, let's concentrate on getting my first one and then see how that works. Okay,
Okay.
so yeah, I guess if you do think that an apartment might be better, then yeah, you folks have done this a lot, and if I can get the layout of the cost, and it's you're saying it's a fairly stable to a certain extent, so.
If we do our proper due diligence. So again, we want to see that the owner union is doing a good job. We want to see that they've appointed a building management company. There are some buildings where they're self-managing. The owner union, it's either small enough or they just don't want to splurge on a building management company, and then they try to manage it themselves. That's a mixed kettle of fish. I mean, some owner unions do a really good job at it, especially if all
Sure.
the owners are owners occupiers as opposed to investors. And others don't, which I suspect is what's happening with your family's condo unit. So, as long as we're doing proper due diligence, and we might have to go through a few potential listings until we land on one that is properly managed, as long as we're doing proper due diligence, then yes, they're more safe and stable than houses. But again, in your cases, in your case, you're talking about a house that's 10 years and younger. So there's not going to be any unexpected maintenance. That's not going to be an issue for the next 10 years. So that's still a viable option. It's just, again, potentially slightly longer vacancies between tenants because we're looking for a family. And also the repairs and renovations between tenants will be more expensive because you've got a bigger floor plan. That's the only thing.
Yeah, ma'am. I think I was just looking at the homes because I was possibly looking to use it in the future.
If you think
That's
it might be 5 years down the track and not 10, that might be a more viable option. Not more, but it might be, I'd say, on par with a condo unit. And then you could potentially be using it for at least another 10 years after you move here. But if you think it'll be closer to 10 years, I'd probably gear more towards the condo route for now.
okay, I mean, I guess if the condo isn't too high in cost, it's possible that I can get that. And then in 5 years, I may have more savings that I can put towards another second. At that time, I could consider a house, maybe, right?
Yeah, or you could resell the condo. It'll probably hold its value if it's in a good enough location, and then recycle that into a nicer house.
Sure. Yeah, I like the idea though to have a passive income. If I do retire and move to Japan or part time to Japan, I can use that to sustain my lifestyle and pay for any
You need
taxes
a
and things
bit
like
more
that.
than that. On a
Right,
100,
right, right.
150,000 US investment, you're going to get, let's say conservatively, hopefully about 4 or 5% a year. I don't know
It's
that that'll fund your entire
not going
life,
to
but
fund it, right? But definitely, I'm going to have my retirement savings, but
yeah,
this will supplement it and
definitely. Yeah.
extend it. So, okay.
So I guess from your email also was asking about next steps and our fees. So essentially, the explanation of services document that I think Faye forwarded explains how we normally
Yes.
work, meaning we do everything on your behalf and you just need to talk to us, make bottom line decisions, and we charge a fixed percentage of the property price. That service we're a little bit too swamped to provide at the moment. We just haven't factored properly for growth, so we're really scrambling now with hiring and training. So until the end of the year, hopefully earlier, but potentially until the end of the year, we can't do full purchase facilitation. What we have been doing for the past year since this trouble started and has been working very well is we've collected a pool of English-speaking, foreigner-friendly realtors that we've vetted and trusted and have worked with in the past. And we put you in touch with one of them. We create a
Okay.
WhatsApp or line chat group so that if you want us consulting on the purchase, which is just a few hundred dollars, we'll be holding your hand, guiding the agent on what due diligence we want done, reviewing documents before you sign them. Just make sure you're not making any costly mistakes.
Sure.
Or by the way, don't feel obliged to hire us. We're very happy to put you with an agent and leave you to it. They're Japanese, so they're all very professional by the book. They're not going to swindle you, but by nature of being realtors, they're more transaction oriented. So the kind of strategic conversation that we just had, they're usually not going to have much of that with you. They say,
Right.
What do you want to buy? Here's a listing, and they help make sure you purchase it legally.
Sure. I have limited Japanese speaking.
Oh no, foreigner friendly English speaking agent that wants to
Right.
do everything remotely. Documentation will be in English. So exactly the same as we would have done logistically, except you'll be talking to them and the lawyer and the tax department or whoever directly. We'll be on the sidelines consulting.
And yeah, I'll probably need someone to sort of say watch my back because I won't be able to understand like the legal aspects of it. And if, yeah, okay.
That's not really a concern in Japan. Everything here is, it's a very legal course or legal recourse oriented country. Everything's got a paper trail to the moon and back. It's more a case of just the nuances of the market, pointing out that, hey, like I've mentioned, due diligence about the condo association, making sure that they're doing the job properly, reviewing the reports that they provide, reviewing the contract before you sign them, just to make sure there aren't any surprises in there that we haven't been aware of earlier. More of a dotting the I's, crossing the T's kind of thing.
Yes, and I like that aspect of that service because, like you said, the realtor may be more interested in going through the selling and buying,
Yeah, that's their
and
job. Can't blame them for it.
so yeah, if I have specific questions and if I have a hard time or they have a hard time understanding me, that it'd be good to have someone on my corner to interpret and guide me too.
So when did you want to get started? I mean, if we're buying an investment property, depending on whether it is going to be a condo or not, but maybe in case of a house as well, most of our customers like to buy something that's already tenanted so that they're buying straight into income as opposed to into a vacancy and a bit of expenses before they tenant it. So if we're going to be buying something that's tenanted, there's not going to be any viewings because Japanese tenancy laws don't allow for anyone to enter a tenanted property. In case we do buy anything vacant for whatever reasons, which I'd only recommend if it was a really super central attractive location that we know we can quickly tenant, then there might be a remote viewing involved. In that case, I don't. You're not going to be coming here in person, right? You'd want somebody to zoom in with you and show you the property.
But like I said, I will be there next week for
Okay.
about 9 days. So if there's my hope was that maybe there could be something that could be set up that I could actually visit because I'll be there, I can see the neighborhoods, but like you said, I
You can
won't.
definitely see neighborhoods. That's not a bad idea, regardless of listings. But unless we're aiming specifically for vacant properties, I don't know that you'll be able to look inside anything.
Correct. I mean, for my initial searches were all homes, so I was looking at
Vacant ones, yeah.
residential areas with convenience stores, shopping areas, grocery shops,
Oh, we
and
need
things like
that with a
that.
condo too.
So I haven't selected that filter for apartments, so I don't know. You may have suggestions on properties, and I haven't put my focus on apartments, so I'll
Well,
probably want to start looking at it.
the consulting route is based on a 10-hour retainer that usually suffices for a single handholding on a single purchase. But in that case, we'll get the agent to research listings for us because they'll do it for free as part of the commission that they're going to get at the end of the sale. Where have you been searching, by the way? Which websites are you on?
Akia Japan, and then I sort of looked at like Sumo.
Akia, Japan? I don't think I'm familiar with that one.
No spaces, akiajapan.com.
Geez, there are a lot of Akia websites coming up on a daily basis. It's like,
Sure.
okay.
It's similar to, Akia Mart, but they have a map-based filters and things like that. So
Are they
I
like
was.
Akia Mart in the sense that they scrape all the, are they like a million listings on there at any given time kind of thing?
I filtered for houses and a certain vintage, 1990s and newer. That's sort of how I was filtering it.
Right.
And then I was looking at the map view and sort
And
of
then
looking between.
do you get a link to the original
Yes,
Japanese
I do.
listing? You do. Okay.
Yes.
Let me just quickly have a look. A contact partner agent. So the listings they show are only listings
They
from.
probably have like a realtor that they work with that can
Oh,
work
original listing
with.
view source. There it is. Ah, you
Right.
can't do that unless you subscribe. And you're subscribed, I'm assuming.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so we would get original Japanese listings from you. And that website does have a condo filter. You can look for condos if you decide to go that way.
Yes, it says apartments.
Okay. Does it also give you a filter of whether it's currently tenanted or not?
I did not see that. No.
Okay. Got it. So
When
we
I
can.
go to the Japanese websites, when I do the translation, it has a lot of information, but some things I don't necessarily doesn't necessarily jump out at me. Like when I was looking at houses, I was trying to avoid getting a septic tank, so I wanted to make sure it's like city sewage, things like that.
Yep.
So, well, now that maybe I should start looking at apartments. That sort of shifts the my focus on
We'll have a quick
how to
look,
look.
but
Yeah.
the Japanese websites Dakumachi and Kenbia are ones geared towards investors. And there it's a lot easier than the general websites like Sumo at Homes, Nifty, the ones that you usually end up on. They're a mix of investment properties and owner-occupied properties, so it's a bit harder to parse the data there and figure out how much the building fees are, whether it's tenanted or not. So I'd maybe focus on Dakumachi and Kenbia. But again, we can just let the agent search for us. We don't even have to do the legwork ourselves.
Okay.
So I guess the first step would be, do you have WhatsApp at all?
I don't use WhatsApp,
Line?
but I can send it up. I set up a Line account.
Whichever, WhatsApp. I mean, personally, I like WhatsApp because it gives me the option to mark a message as unread and get back to it later, which Line sadly doesn't do. But Line is fine as well. So you've got my mobile number. Oh, you don't have my mobile number. Let me just reply to your last message with just a blank signature. And then you'll have my mobile number at the bottom. If you
Okay.
could add me and send me a little emoji or something on Line or WhatsApp, whichever. Then
Okay.
I'll kick off a chat group with the realtor and we'll take it from there. A week, how long are you staying for?
I'll be there on the 18th, early evening, and then I leave the following Tuesday on the 27th, I believe.
Okay, so almost 2 weeks. Okay, that's not bad. Oh no, a week and a bit. Okay. Hopefully, towards the end of next week, we should be able to line up some viewings if we do end up looking at vacant properties. But let's get
Okay.
started as soon as we can because it is a pretty short time frame.
Okay, sounds good.
So send me, just add me and send me a little emoji or something. Actually, more than an emoji, have a little bit more of a think and let me know if we're focusing on houses or condos, tenanted or not tenanted. And just send me a reminder on what the total budget is, including costs, because purchase costs could be around 15%, worst case.
Yep, I've sort of got the ideas from watching your video and many others that a certain amount or on top of the actual property cost.
Correct.
So, okay, yep.
So send me a
I
quick
just don't.
summary online or WhatsApp or wherever you end up adding me, and then I'll kick off a chat group. I'll see which agent is most readily available from the ones we work with, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, sounds good.
Excellent.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So, really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast. Any other
okay,
questions?
Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
No, I was just focused on houses, just thinking of where I would like to live in the future. So now I have to sort of... We can still do that.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, your plan is kind of borderline enough so that both paths might work. I'm not saying definitely. If you don't want to go through the hassle of reselling a house, you know, reselling a house 5-10 years down the track, then we'll just aim for something younger and for a property that you'd also feel comfortable. And then, you know, whatever rental income we can get from it after repairs, renovations, whatnot, that'll be it.
Okay. Can I get take on one of the properties I was looking at?
Absolutely.
It's still available. And
you want to send me the link here in the chat?
Sure. Chat.
Okay. And let me share my screen. Okay, so 11 years old, which is not too bad. So, I mean, look, 11 years old, even in 10 years' time, I wouldn't have felt bad if you were just purchasing it and it's 20, 21 years old, right? So it's not a bad... Mm-hmm. It's not a bad choice for a holiday home, even if you do end up moving here in only 10 years' time.
Yes. That's sort of the reason why I start to look at newer properties that don't need renovation.
Yeah. It's a little bit close to the neighbors. It might be a bit of a hassle to renovate, you know, the leftmost part of the house if and when
right.
we need to. But otherwise, yeah, looks cute. Clearly no work that needs to be done on it at the moment. It's probably young enough so that we don't even, I mean, it never hurts, but we probably don't need a structural inspection on it.
Mm-hmm.
Owner in residence. Okay, so hopefully well taken care of. And I'm assuming water supply and sewerage, yes.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, again, if you're looking at 10 years and younger, there's not going to be a huge amount of feedback I can give you. They're all going to be in good shape. And this one is not exactly 10 years and younger, but it's very close to it. It's only once they hit about 20 years that we maybe want to dig into them a little bit deeper. But anything that you look at this age is going to be in good condition.
Yes.
So I'm not going to have much feedback to provide on it. It's more a case of the strategy. Do you want to go for that? And then in 10 years' time... So in 10 years' time, it would be, let's take worst case scenario, we're only moving here in 10. Oh, the other thing to consider is with the plan is it's not that easy to unilaterally cancel a residential lease, right? So if you already have a tenant in there, You'll need to 6 months. Generally, it's assumed that a long-term residential lease automatically renews every 2 years.
Yes.
And if you want to not renew it, then 6 months before it expires, that's usually the notice period in the contract, you'll need to let them know that you're not planning to renew the lease. And to avoid them having a legal leg to stand on, not that any Japanese tenant has ever taken us to court, they're very conflict averse, but legally they do have a legal leg to stand on if they choose not to want to vacate. So to avoid that, we normally would offer them somewhere between 6 to 10 months of rent as compensation if we're canceling, if we're not renewing the lease, which is what it costs them to
Wow.
move. Yeah. But I mean, an
I
typical
probably
family
would.
tenant wouldn't be in place for more than 10, 15 years normally. So we can just wait until they, move out and then you move in.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't force their hand to move out quickly. So, definitely would give much
No, but I mean, but what
needed.
if in 10 years' time you want to move and they're not showing any sign of leaving?
Well, I'm hoping I would have, a little bit more savings that maybe I could find another property too. So
Okay.
I'm hoping to get more than one property where I can live in one and then have passive income to supplement
Well, I
my
mean, if you're
livings.
that flexible, then at that point you could buy a vacant condo unit, stay in it for a few years until they move
Right, right,
out, and
right.
then move into the property and rent
Some
out the
so
condo,
that's
right?
something that I could do where I could wait it out until they decide to move out, maybe.
Okay.
As long as, well, yeah, okay. I mean, that's nothing's concrete yet. I'm not sure. I could decide if I'm not sure how much longer my mother's going to be around, so
Well, in that
timelines can
case,
change.
can I maybe suggest, rather than start spending your time and money immediately, we're happy to take your money at any point in time, but rather than start putting money into stuff now, why not use this trip to just scout out neighborhoods, see where you'd be most comfortable living? And then we don't need you here for the purchase. We can just start looking into potential properties, and then maybe it'll also give you a better idea of whether you'd be more comfortable buying a house or a condo unit. You might, look around areas that have condo units and find out that they're interesting to invest in. I don't know. Entirely your choice. If you want to start looking at listings, vacant houses, but you don't have to make any immediate decisions. That's what I mean.
Sure. Not sure how the yen exchange rate's going to be, in 5, 10 years. And
I'd lock it in a Wise account anyway, right now. Do you have a Wise account?
no, I created a OFX account
OFX are
using
great, but
your link.
they don't let you hold money. It's just point to point. So when it's time to purchase, then you transfer funds directly to whoever needs to receive the money. They're a lot better for bigger transfers, like the actual property settlement itself, because Wise in Japan are limited to 1 million yen transfers.
Yes.
But if you open a US Wise account, you can hold as much money as you want there. So you can lock in the rates right now. And then when it's time to purchase, so let me give you a referral code for
Yeah, I
Wise.
was reading that Wise would be for smaller transactions versus OFX would be for the actual purchase.
That's on the transaction front, yes. But the advantage of Wise is that they also let you hold money there, which OFX don't. So you can start converting dollars into yens right now while the exchange rate is attractive, rather than hope it'll be attractive when you're actually purchasing. So let me just quickly give you a referral link to Wise so we'll both get some bonuses. Give me a sec.
Sure. Okay. But I've been going to Japan for a while, and in the past it was just main strictly for vacation, and I only after I got back after 2023 did I start seeing videos about foreigners buying property, and I thought I've been there many times. I should have looked at neighborhoods while I was there. So this is kind of like my first time. I'm going to go as a vacation plus scope out neighborhoods.
Yep.
So, but
I mean, you've been inside a Japanese home before, I assume, right?
not a personal family home.
Okay. In that case, maybe it is worth looking at a few vacant listings while you're vacant or owner-occupied listings while you're here.
I used to live in Japan when I was young,
Oh,
but
were you? Oh, did you? Okay.
yeah. So I was near Tokyo area, Mitaka.
Right.
And but my family left when I was 9 years old, so all my Japanese language understanding, it's sort of faded from not use, not using any Japanese in the US. So
Well, in
it's
that case,
unfortunate.
maybe it is worth looking at a few vacant houses while you're here, just to give you an idea of what it might feel like being living in one of those, the modern built Japanese family home. And but if that's the case, we'll need to move fairly quickly. So have a little bit of a think and then hit me up online or WhatsApp and tell me what exactly you want to do with the trip and what next steps you want to take, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm gonna be there. I might as well take a look if it's possible to have some viewing, even though I don't wanna rush it, but I think I'm gonna have the time. I didn't book my entire trip for, sightseeing. I did leave a lot of time to possible viewing, so
Well,
if I could get some.
agents here take a viewing fairly seriously. So if we are going to be looking at actual vacant list, I mean, our buyer side agent is less of a concern because they're used to working with foreigners, but listing agents that we're going to be booking a viewing with via our buyer's agent, they're going to take the viewing seriously. So if we look at a bunch and then never get back to them, they might not want to work with us again, which would be a shame.
Sure. Okay.
So I wouldn't go that path unless you are potentially considering to pull the trigger on one of those.
Yeah, I'm actually wanting to,
Okay.
but you're kind of saying I should look at apartments, so that part I'll
Well,
have to do a little bit more research.
only from a purely investment perspective, but in that case,
Right,
we
right, right.
probably will be buying something that's already tenanted, so there's not going to be any viewings
Oh,
involved.
sure. Oh, okay. Okay. I still do like the possibility. Like if I do get a newer home that might not require a lot more, immediate renovation. So,
If it's 10 years and younger, it's a very feasible strategy. I just wanted to lay out more options there. That's all.
Sure.
Okay, so
Okay, let
just
me
have a
think
bit of
about
a
it.
think, yeah, and send me a message online, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Once that happens, I know the document mentioned something about signing, filling out some forms or
That's if
anything
we're
like that.
doing, yeah, that's if we're doing the full purchase facilitation, which we're not doing until the end of this year.
Okay.
It's only
Okay.
consulting. It's just a matter of paying the retainer invoice, which we can get to. Let's get you in to view listings first. That's the top concern
Okay.
with your timeline.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Understood.
Great.
All
Talk
right.
to you soon.
All right, thank you very much, Steph.
Pleasure. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's akiya-mart, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today. So there you have it. Nice chat there, which hopefully offers some food for thought to those among you who are also considering this hybrid model of an investment property come holiday or family home, or vice versa for that matter. A lot of the same logic applies to anyone in the opposite situation who's looking for a holiday home that could potentially be converted into an investment property down the track if and when you're not using it anymore. So I hope you found some value in that conversation. Now, as promised, a little bonus for you all. This is an interview I've given to Shu Matsuo Post, who probably needs no introduction. He's attended two of our summits in Tokyo now, together with his partner, Brett Lee, where they've both shared some fascinating insights from their new platform, Akia Hub. I say new, but it's been around for about a year now, and it's getting some very serious traction. But in this specific case, back in April, in the previous Japan Real Estate Summit, he wanted to interview me on the topic of Japan's real estate property investment landscape. And so he grills me about trends, hotspots, buyer profiles, and much, much more. Hope you enjoy this conversation as well.
You're about to see fascinating conversations I had with some of the biggest English-speaking experts in Japanese real estate. We talked about multifamily investing, short and midterm rentals, renovations, loans for foreigners in Japan. I think you're going to love it. Enjoy.
All right. Well, Ziv, well, thanks for having us today.
Thank
so
you for
you're
coming.
The main host of this event.
No, I'm just the one herding all the cats to make it happen. But the organizing is Emil, Tracy, Blanca, and myself.
Right. That's wonderful. And you've been doing this for how many years?
Right since COVID, like, petered off enough to allow us to. So this is the fifth event in 3 years.
Okay, that's awesome. I know we spoke last year. I think it was like post-summer. So it's been quite, you know, several months. Mm. I think that video did pretty well. And people are very interested in like what we had to talk about. But just wanted to kind of follow up with you on, you know, what you're seeing. And I know you're primarily in Fukuoka, but you help people purchase.
Well, we're based in Fukuoka because we like Fukuoka, but we're nationwide.
Nationwide, So 2025, what are you seeing in Japanese real estate if you were to summarize?
Interest, I mean, demand is as steady and constantly rising as it has been for the last, I'd say, decade or so. Prices-wise, I have no idea. It has been going up in all major cities for a while. I mean, kind of froze during COVID and then right back up in all most major cities, except maybe Nagoya, Sapporo haven't done as well, but all of the rest of them. I don't know, no crystal ball. I assume it'll keep going up, but I don't know. Japan's macroeconomics are not that attractive and the population is aging. Debt to GDP ratio is one of the highest in the world. So, and there was the 25 years of deflation. So I don't know. I'm hesitant to project what will happen. But I think central Tokyo, central Osaka, central Fukuoka will definitely continue to go up. Kyoto always goes up a lot more steady, but has never stopped going up. And the rest of the country, I can't say. But I mean, rural areas have been going up for the first time in a long time the last couple of years. So we'll see.
And so for your clients, where are they buying? Recently. So those, I guess those...
The investors, you mean?
Investors, yeah.
Investors who are looking for more semi-passive types of investment would be buying in top seven cities, usually not in central Tokyo. Maybe occasionally we find a good deal in suburban Tokyo, but mostly out of Tokyo because yields there are very low.
And when you say suburb of Tokyo, which area is particularly...
On the very edges,
Edogawa.
Edogawa, and what's the other one? Higashi...
Like I said,
the other river. Sorry, I'm not. We don't do much in Tokyo. We occasionally find a good deal that we have to pounce on very, very quickly. But mostly our clients stay out of Tokyo unless they're doing anything more creative, like what you do or what Tracy does, short-term stays. Then Tokyo is definitely an option. But for most of our clients who are semi-passive, money in the bank type of investors who want to see a, just a steady paycheck, and any of the major seven cities. With a caveat of Sapporo being a bit heavier on maintenance and vacancies because of the winters, and Nagoya being a bit more blue collar, just because that's the way it is there. Otherwise, all of the major seven cities, prefectural capitals, so the biggest city in an otherwise rural area, and satellite cities, so anywhere within an hour to any of the big cities with a convenient transportation line, those are all attractive cash flow wise.
What about you? Where are you investing?
All of the above.
All of the above.
Not Tokyo. We have Sapporo, Fukuoka, Kobe, Kumamoto, which is one of those, again, prefectural capitals.
Yeah, and what are you buying? Like apartment units?
When
houses?
We buy cash, we usually buy mansion rooms, like individual units in bigger condo blocks. Yeah. When we're leveraging to some degree or another, we buy small multi-unit residential buildings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the buildings will have a commercial ground floor, like a couple of shops or offices. Sometimes it'll be, I mean, if we own the entire building, then we can decide that it's a mixed purpose building. And then we might get a tenant who's a lawyer or an accountant, the type of people who rent an otherwise normal residential looking apartment, but actually turn it into an office. That's usually what we focus on. But we like to be hands off. We like to have a long-term tenancy in place and then move on to the next deal rather than try to tweak it and get higher yield or whatnot. So we suit our client profile. That's usually we go for the same things.
That I agree with you on, like long-term tenants, like the long play, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest difference between like you and me, I only do single-family houses like Akiya's, right? And I think you primarily do like mansions, like apartment units, like more multifamily.
For, again, depends on the customer. For semi-passive investment, then yes, we focus on mansion rooms or itobiru, like small wooden buildings. But anybody who wants to get creative, our customers, it usually means Airbnb, though. We don't we don't buy to renovate and then put in a long-term tenant. Our clients usually want something, either an owner change with a tenant already in there or something they'll be able to very quickly, they don't want to get into projects. Yeah. That's what we send them to you for.
I got two questions on that as well. What's the average investment amount that your clients are doing, and what's the percentage between cash and loan?
99% of our clients are not loan clients. We have two of them at the moment, one of them getting a loan independently, one via Alicia, who are going to be experimenting with loans. But almost all of our clients are non-residents, so leveraging is more challenging for them. Price-wise, it's really hard to say because we run the gamut. We have people buying Akiya's for 10, 20, 30,000 or little mansion rooms in small towns for 10, 20, 30,000, which is still doable. And other people are buying central Kyoto castles for $1 million plus or small buildings for $1 million plus. So anywhere in between, I'd say the average is maybe 15 to 40 million yen, which covers like a nicer apartment or a few apartments and all the way up to entry-level small buildings.
Has anyone approached you about commercial or like split use? Because I've noticed a couple of our members have been like, hey, like I found some houses that have restaurants or have space under.
Yep.
Is that popular or is something super rare?
Yeah, so we have, again, we have, when somebody buys an entire building, then sometimes, depending on how big and whether it's concrete or wood, sometimes the ground floor will be shops and offices. And people who buy mansion rooms, sometimes they, because they want commercial tenants, they would target specifically mixed-purpose buildings, and then they would be able to decide what kind of tenants they want to advertise to and bring on. But strictly commercial properties, people are occasionally asking about. But commercial is interesting because the one advantage is you can definitely raise the rent. If the economy does well and the business does well, then you can definitely raise the rent, which you can't really do with residential leases unless people will start getting higher salaries, which hasn't been the case so far. But the downside is that for a commercial tenant, it's a lot easier to declare bankruptcy and walk away from a lease. And especially if it's in a walk-in kind of business with like especially restaurants, bars, that kind of thing, the renovation expenses that you're not going to be able to charge them for are going to be very steep in those cases. You'll have to completely strip the place and start again in many cases. So again, our clients are usually the more play it safe, no hassle people, so they tend to avoid those.
You also get like a 11 or 12 months of deposit, right, for commercial, I guess.
Yes, yeah. But that's not always enough to, if that was a bar where people are smoking and you had a kitchen with an oil fire, that's not going to cut it. The leases are longer as well, so you can get a tenant in for 3 to 5 years, which is more stable as long as their business does well. And again, if it doesn't, then it's very easy for them to declare bankruptcy and walk away, even in Japan.
What are some pros, or like what do you like about those like more passive, you know, I guess apartment units, like multifamily units investments, as opposed to, you know, older single family homes?
Well, I like the stability of them, and I like the fact that I know if it's a long-term lease, you're familiar with that too. If it's a long-term lease, then you know exactly how much you're going to be getting every month, minus a few surprises from maintenance and repairs and sudden vacancies, but basically it's a paycheck, right? anything that's shorter or medium term, you constantly have to be on your toes, see what the competition is doing, vacancy rates, occupancy rates, more so with short-term stay, maybe a little bit less with monthly rentals. The projects we have, we do have a lot of clients who buy something dilapidated and then, you know, either DIY renovate or outsource renovate it and then do all kinds of other things with it. But from my perspective, I like to get a deal done and go on to the next deal. And if I'm constantly tweaking or I'm entering a renovation project, I have to be hands-on. I can't go ahead and I'm also geeky that way. Like, I like to sit on Excel sheets and constantly evaluate deals and add them and see how the portfolio is doing. It's a lot more challenging to do that when you have to be hands-on in a project all the time. So it's just a personal preference, I think.
What does your portfolio look like right now? Like your portfolio?
My wife knows the exact numbers. I'll need to confirm.
Like, but I have too many. I don't know.
It's not that many. I think we had 12 properties, one of which was a building, the rest of which were mansion rooms. And then we liquidated a couple to buy our new home office combo where we are now, and another one to buy the office that we're in, that we were in before that one. So I can't remember at the moment. I'm sorry. I think about a dozen of them all up, most of the mansion rooms and one small building. Now looking at a second small building.
Yeah, and all over Japan.
All over Japan.
Okay, yeah. Nice. So you mentioned about minpaku, like short-term rentals, and are you doing that management for your clients as well?
A handful of cases and people who have just recently started experimenting with them. It's not something that we're very hands-on with. But we do have 2 monthly rental clients out of about 200 clients and 300 properties. We have 1 monthly rental mansion room, 1 monthly rental house in Kyoto, and 1 client who has a small building and is now experimenting with short-term stay. So every time a tenant moves out, he's turning that unit into a short-term stay property. And so far doing very well. It's a fairly central Fukuoka. It's been constantly booked. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as the tent moves out, as soon as the guest moves out, there's another one in. But it's a very small sample, so I can't really testify much yet.
For the short-term rentals outside of Fukuoka, so like the ones that you have to manage remotely, how can you kind of walk me through how you're managing?
Well, same with the long-term rentals. We don't do anything ourselves except represent the buyer.
Operator.
So we find the best property managers, renovation company, maintenance company in each city that we work in.
Yeah.
If it's a relatively bigger city, we probably already have somebody there that we're working with. And for short-term rentals, we have a company. They're based in Fukuoka, but like us, they're nationwide. So as long as they can install remote locks on the property, which is easy, and as long as they can find a local cleaning crew, they'll be able to manage everywhere in Japan. So similar, we just find the best companies to work with and then we utilize them.
That's awesome. What's the name of that company in Fukuoka?
Smart Inn. Yeah,
okay.
Smart Inn. Shun Matsuki, very, very cool bilingual Japanese entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's good to know. The reason why I wanted to ask these questions is that we get a lot of people buy vacation homes. We help with the acquisition part, but after that, if it's a vacation home, you know, a lot of them are like, can you help us with short-term rental management? We help with long-term rentals, but not really with short-term rentals just yet. So
the reason I'm hesitant to talk about that is in everything that we do, we don't like to rely on a single service provider or something, like, because that's a single point of failure, right?
Yeah.
So long-term residential leases, not a problem. We can find a bunch of them at least in every big city and definitely in some of the smaller ones, which are being served by the bigger cities around them. Short-term rentals nationwide, I only know Shun-san who can provide that service and is great, and I hope and think he's going to be there forever, but I don't like to rely on that as a strategy because, again, single point of failure. So in bigger cities like Tokyo, Osaka, there's at least 2 or 3 monthly short-term stay rental property managers that we can work with. They might not all be the best. The other thing is that when we serve clients as a single point of contact, then a lot of our work is replacing a property manager when they don't do a good job for whatever reason. They maybe started out well, and then one person leaves, the other one doesn't do a good job, the company goes downhill, they made promises that they can't really keep when it comes down to it. So we have to have backup channels. So we tell people when they contact us, we currently can help you with this, 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 and that company, but we still don't have If they, for any reason, are not satisfying your needs, we will have to start researching new companies and testing new companies. We can't vet anyone until we've worked with them.
I know last time I spoke with you, you weren't accepting new clients. You were just way too busy. Right?
For full purchase facilitation, we do consult on purchases. Okay. But for full purchase facilitation, we're still struggling to find a bilingual bookkeeper in Fukuoka. That's been the, again, single point of failure, right? So we're consulting on purchases. We put people in touch with agents that we've vetted and that we've worked with and that we know are good. And if it's a new agent that we think will be good, we let them know that they're going to be the guinea pig and are they okay with that. And then once the purchase is concluded, we can definitely take them on for management. Mm. That we can always do.
What kind of people should work with your company? Or who do you want to work with?
The people who should be contacting us are people who want to be less hands-on. So as long as they're okay with us managing everything for them, we'll of course answer the questions and do what they want to do, but people who want to be hands-on and DIY and be more involved in a renovation project or more creative strategies, we can definitely serve them if they want a single point of contact, but we'll be utilizing people like you to actually get the job done depending on what the project is. From our perspective, we're always happy to try and work with everyone, but some, like for example, somebody who's in a very, very tight budget, if their entire life savings is $20,000-$30,000 and they're really concerned about potentially losing that money or it not generating the income that they want, we don't want to burst their bubble, shatter their dreams. We would recommend to them not to work with somebody else, but just to save up a bit more money so that they're not really, their entire family's future is not hanging on that single investment property that they've purchased. And people who cannot get used to the way things work in Japan, that one we're not going to be able to find out in advance. But people who are walking into the market expecting that they can force their way on the local professionals that they work with, that everybody will adapt to their pace because they're the one coming in with the cash, and if something works overseas, it should also work here. They're going to be very disappointed and we're not going to enjoy working together. Sometimes we can spot them after a few initial conversations, but sometimes it has to be throughout the process. Yeah,
totally. I understand. You had a question.
So I assume most people bring properties to you, but do you ever bring properties?
I don't know. We research. So we can, if we're doing full purchase facilitation, which we'll be hopefully doing again towards the end of the year, then we will no limit on the number of hours that we work. We'll research whatever they want for them. And when we're doing initial onboarding, we provide a couple of hours of free research just to give them an idea of what's available in their criteria on the market. And then if we're doing the consulting way, which is what we're the only thing we're doing now, then the agents that we'll be putting them in touch with can also research for them. But that works for investment properties. For holiday homes, not so much, because they'll be the best filter. I mean, they can look at a few photos and a layout and a map location, they know if it ticks their boxes. With us researching that kind of thing for them, it'll be a lot more hit and miss.
It's really easy for them to say no to 100 of them.
Exactly.
It's hard to get the one that they want.
Yeah. So with them, it's more of a mixed. I mean, they'll be searching on all of the main property websites or on AkiyaMart, or I think you guys will be launching or have already launched a product that will assist people with that. But some of the smaller properties, especially in locations which are more holiday, resort, onsen, ski related, those can't be parsed by the automatic processes that big property portals work with. So in those cases, the agents will often, the buyer side agent that we'll put them in contact with will often have to contact local smaller real estate companies in that area and get on their good side.
Open that drawer of
exactly. Yes, or take a photo of the window that they got outside the shop. Yeah. So in that case, the agent will be a lot more involved in the research as well.
My last question, where can people find out more about you and your company?
Nippon Tradings International or nippontradings.com is our website. My name usually shows up on most of the social media channels. So Ziv Nakajima, again, there's only one of me out there with that name. The Japan Real Estate page and Facebook group is ours. We exist everywhere. So Nippon Tradings International or Ziv Nakajima, again, those are usually the names that we'll find out. And the Japan Real Estate Podcast, we're the only one out there.
Well, thanks for your time. I thought it was going to be a 5-minute conversation, but it turned out to be like 20. Thank you for taking the time.
Pleasure as always. Weekend, and good luck with AkiyaHub. Looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. So yes, great speaking with Shu. As always, I really enjoy his thoughtful, knowledgeable questions and interview style. Hope our little chat was of interest to you too. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.